Well, so what, says Miles Davis. Well, I'll tell you so what. I'm Mimi Rosenberg, and with Ken Nash, we're building bridges, and to free Indigenous activist Leonard Peltier. Supporters of Leonard Peltier are calling on President Biden to grant clemency to the Indigenous leader and activist who recently marked his 80th birthday behind bars after nearly a half a century in prison for a crime he did not commit. He is the longest-serving political prisoner in the U.S. The ailing Peltier, who has serious health conditions, has always maintained his innocence over the 1975 killing of two FBI agents in a shootout on the Pine Ridge Reservation. His conviction was riddled with irregularities and prosecutorial misconduct. For more on Peltier and the campaign to free him, we asked Professor Ward Churchill, Native rights activist, professor of ethnic studies, author of over 53 books, whose primary focus is on the historic treatment of political dissenters and Native Americans in the United States, to read a statement of Leonard Peltier on his 80th birthday. Then we'll speak with Jennifer Jones, Leonard Peltier's lead attorney, so that we can free Leonard Peltier. Let's listen.
Greetings, my friends, loved ones, relatives, supporters. When I was a child, I looked to my elders to learn how to live with Mother Earth's rhythms. I yearned to sit by a fire with my loved ones and have our children look to me to learn the mysteries of Mother Earth. I want to laugh, share the pipe, and gaze into the eyes of a woman who does not carry handcuffs. I have become an elder. I suppose in many ways I am still the 9-year-old who founded the resistance among my peers at Wahpeton Boarding School, the young man willing to sacrifice everything to protect my people, and the young man who worked hard and played hard when the chance arose. At the same time, I feel every second of these past 80 years wreaking havoc on my body. I have been losing my eyesight, but my inner vision is not that of an old man. I long to get out of there and work. My mind is filled with ideas to combat the greed and corruption that spread like a poisonous mold through the halls of those who govern us. When I was sentenced, I stated, I do feel pity for your people, that they must live under such an ugly system. Under your system, you are taught greed, racism, and corruption, and the most serious of all, the destruction of our Mother Earth. Under the Native American system, we are taught all people are brothers and sisters, to share the wealth with poor and needy. But the most important of all is to respect and preserve the earth. To me, considered to be our mother. I could not help but see far and wide. I saw the continued colonization and destruction of Mother Earth and the ongoing termination of an entire people. I perceive more than most of you know, even in lockdown. I see spirit warriors and stand up and speak out. It does my heart good. I also see the erosion of laws meant to protect our very right to survive. Civil rights used to be a pretense. They were never a true thing. Now I see the government is not even bothering to pretend. We cannot continue to allow greed, racism, and corruption to rule us. Remember, my people, remember who you are. Mother Earth herself flows through our veins. We endure. The greed, corruption, and disdain of the colonizers will bring them to their ruin. They seek to ravish Mother Earth while chasing the almighty dollar. We have survived their apocalypse. We are not simply enduring. We are destined to thrive. The lockdowns have not been kind to my body. I am not going to stand here and cry over what happens to an 80-year-old body held in lockdown for over 4 years. I will continue to plan, think, and change what is within my reach. Hope is a hard thing, but I still hold hope. The parole denial was not unexpected. I will not say I was overjoyed with the outcome, but we knew. They may yet surprise us with the answer to the appeal Jennifer Jones and Moira Meltzer-Cohen filed. Jennifer Jones has assured me from the start that she is fully committed to my case. I trust her word. Jennifer will fight for me and with me in court if the appeal is rejected. My friends, I need you to fight for you. Police are beating children in the streets. The Parole Commission still illegally holds many of us long past our release dates. The Supreme Court has made it impossible for people to challenge wrongful convictions. Indigenous people are still being forced from our land. We protect Mother Earth. They have stripped her bare and now want our resources. Our people go missing at a staggering rate and no one blinks. We are awaiting the Uhuru verdict to determine whether free speech exists, a verdict that may well come down on my 80th birthday, and I am still in prison. The Constitution reads, "We the people." We must tell those in power, "We are the people." The statement was meant to be released on my 80th birthday. I was in a 10-day lockdown, and my board waited for me to approve the final edits. I regret that no statement was released on my 80th birthday. I regret that this country has been taken by those who can cage human beings in conditions that would be illegal for dogs. As I said, I need you to fight for you. I fight every day for my freedom with my legal team. I am now fighting for my life. They sentenced me to death by incarceration. They are trying hard to enforce that. They have never managed to cage my spirit. They never will. Do not allow anyone to cage yours. Dope Shaw, Leonard Peltier.
Jennifer Jones, we are speaking today on Indigenous Peoples Day, as people thought to call it, although we are still saddled with the establishment generally acknowledging it as Columbus Day and certainly parades throughout the country for Columbus. Now, I raise that because it seems to me to provide the perfect political context to understand the case of the great Indigenous American Indian warrior, Leonard Peltier. And I wonder about your thoughts in the legal context of the reality of a society that continues to celebrate Columbus Day, someone who committed mass genocide on Indigenous populations, and the struggle for the Indigenous populations to continue to recognize this day as Indigenous Peoples Day. Where does the case of Leonard Peltier fit into this?
Well, first, Mimi, thank you so much for having me on. It's really an honor to be here today, especially on Indigenous Peoples Day. I will say that Leonard's case falls within a long line of anti-colonial struggle that still continues today. Of course, that's represented in the celebration still of Columbus Day, despite the genocide that he participated in and led. I know our brothers and sisters out in Italy are going to be doing a Indigenous Peoples Day action. And given Christopher Columbus's Italian ancestry, will be denouncing the genocide that he led. But I will also say that Leonard himself recognizes his case as part of the lineage of the anti-colonial struggle. And in 1982, he wrote a statement comparing the struggles in Palestine and Lebanon to what was going on with the indigenous struggle and what he was fighting against, and sending solidarity to the Palestinian people, to the Lebanese people, to the PLO, understanding exactly what those intersections were. And it is still relevant. I mean, it is so poignantly and profoundly relevant today, especially with the genocide that is happening in Gaza right now, and the entire conflict in the Middle East, and our government's complicity in that. He makes no two ways about that. And so the struggle continues, in at least in the quest for his freedom and the recognition of the humanity and the sovereignty of indigenous people.
So let's talk about the Leonard is now 80 years old, is the longest held indigenous prisoner in this country. Tell us about the conditions of Leonard's imprisonment now, and then let's make out the legal case for Leonard Peltier. Politically, why is he being held all of these years? And how are we going to free them?
Absolutely. Well, the conditions of confinement that Leonard is in, well, they've historically always been bad. They're acutely a problem right now. Leonard is housed at USP Coleman 1 in Wildwood, Florida, and that is a maximum security prison. And Leonard just turned 80. He is on a walker. He needs a CPAP machine. He has severe diabetes, jaw issues, problems with dental, treatment, really. He needs dental treatment. He has dental loss, which is very difficult to get at USP Coleman 1. Because there is frequent lockdowns, he is denied religious services. A lot of the time, outdoor time is something that is few and far between for Leonard. So he really is on a form of solitary confinement most of the time, only able to get out for showers and some commissary every now and again. That's what it boils down to. In fact, USP Coleman 1 is on lockdown right now. And so we've had little contact with Leonard, which is always very hard. So the conditions that he is in are dire. It is not a place for Leonard, not only because he just should not be in prison at all, but because he is 81 years old and needs to be, pending his release, in a medical facility. He needs a medical transfer. And in fact, even the U.S. Parole Commission really encouraged the Bureau of Prisons to evaluate Leonard for medical transfer. He has fallen several times, breaking his glasses, breaking his walker. The other prisoners do a pretty good job of keeping track of him and helping him and assisting him, but still, because of the nature of a maximum security prison, he falls and he hurts himself. He's got a diabetic foot condition that has been progressive and that has hospitalized him as well. He needs a diabetic shoes. And for that reason, and we believe that his health care is being mismanaged, we send in once a month, once or twice a month, an independent doctor who meets with Leonard to discuss his health, to document it. And we think that that's been helpful. In a few ways, but certainly to make sure that we hear from Leonard how he is doing, and get a prognosis or a suggested prognosis on what should be done and what is going on, and if he's receiving the standard of care. And often he does not receive the standard of care. So we his legal team, along with his committee, are calling for a medical transfer. It is so obvious that he needs it. He needs attention to his teeth. Like I said, there's dental loss. He has about perhaps maybe three teeth left. And so, as a diabetic, that becomes a problem because he needs diabetic meals. And when he is on lockdown, he does not receive food that he can really eat. To our understanding, it's bologna sandwiches and peanut butter and jelly, or just jelly sandwiches is what they get if they've not been able to be let out just for a bit to get some commissary. So it's a vicious cycle. And of course, it's hard to keep your blood sugar in check when you're eating things like that are not great for your blood sugar, even if you are receiving insulin. So Leonard needs a medical transfer pending his release. The situation that he's currently in, where he's incarcerated, is particularly dangerous. And that is also, why we plan to litigate his case. It is a claim that he has. The reasons Leonard is currently being incarcerated are distinct, although it is the same system, from the legal reasons he was put into prison. So what put him into prison is not the same thing that is keeping him in prison. Leonard is an old law prisoner. And unfortunately, many of our political prisoners who were convicted before 1976, who are held by the United States government, fall within this category. It's a small group of aging prisoners who are subject to the U.S. Parole Commission and cannot bring directly to court things like a compassionate release because old law prisoners are exempt from the First Step Act. So it would be the prison, basically the Department of Justice, deciding those matters for great substantial parts of their cases. And what the U.S. Parole Commission is doing is applying a standard that was not in effect at the time of the offense, meaning that the standard they're applying in terms of Leonard's sentencing is much harsher. And in our view, that's a violation of the ex post facto clause. It's a clear, in our view, clear. That means making a punishment, either creating a punishment after the fact or making it more severe after the fact. And so that is something that the framers of the Constitution decided should be a prohibition. And so what is occurring in Leonard's case is just that, in addition to RFRA violations and certain calculations and things like that. And also there is Leonard's case has not been reviewed by a court in over a decade. And in that time, in the interim, there have been precedent that has come forth from the US Supreme Court, from other courts, that supports his release and certainly is worthy of challenge. And so there's a small line of precedent involving old law prisoners, some of whom folks know, some who folks don't know, about the way and the manner that the statutes are being applied. And we've tried to speak with the US Parole Commission about this and to no avail. They insist that this is correct. And so it has to go to court. It's there really matters that at this point are reviewable by a court, especially now that Leonard has been denied a parole, his appeal has been denied, all of which we were expecting, particularly the way that the procedure was handled in the first instance by the U.S. Parole Commission. The United States Supreme Court last year decided a case called Jones versus Hendricks, and it basically has the effect of making it very, very difficult for a prisoner to assert a claim basically about their exoneration. And if folks, it's a complex case, and I don't want, I'm trying to avoid getting into the legalese, but if folks want to pull up Justice Brown Jackson's dissent in that case, it really clarifies the effect that it has on keeping innocent people through technicalities, really legal technicalities, in the habeas statutes, imprisoned. That is the effect of that case. And so it would be a very slippery slope, given the kind of habeases Leonard has had in the past, to then go and try and pierce the veil once again with new evidence. It likely would be unsuccessful. And so that is the reason why we are taking more of a procedural approach to this and what the US Parole Commission is doing. Because in fact, those are issues that have never, ever, surprisingly, been raised in Leonard's case. And so we think we have a good shot with that, and certainly to have a court at least review it and address it. And that also can get complex as well. But a couple of years ago, the UN Working Group on Arbitrary Detention released a report on Leonard, and they determined that he is arbitrarily detained, which is something that is not easy to get. In the past, they have actually declined to do so with Leonard, but they did so a couple of years ago, and it's largely based on the due process violations, some of this ex post facto stuff in their own analysis. We are not saying it is correct. In their own analysis, Leonard should have been out in 1992. What we say, myself and my co-counsel, is that certainly at the time, the statute at the time of the so-called offense in Leonard's case, the United States Congress did not have the intent to keep prisoners in prison this long, the class of prisoner that Leonard is in. And 50 years is disproportionate. It is not in line with the intent of Congress at that time. And so we intend to bring that before a court. Well, I certainly think the way that the Bureau of Prisons has gone about addressing the medical care of many of our political prisoners is an example of death by incarceration. And so too, the way that they have treated the parole of not only Leonard, of Dr. Shakur, of Veronica Bowers, who is thankfully out and as I see, doing well. But it shows that is also death by incarceration in the way that they approach these cases. And I tend to believe, it just my in my personal, well, I guess my professional legal judgment, that the United States government is aware of who is in this very small class of prisoners. It's about 153 prisoners, federal prisoners in the United States. And so they make it very difficult for them, knowing that many of them are activists, are political, considered political prisoners, make it very difficult for them to get out. It was stunning. After a 7-hour hearing, there were 4 hours of which were recorded, to see that it was basically the decision of the U.S. Parole Commission, with the exception of, maybe a paragraph or two, that it looked copy and pasted from the previous 15 years from 2009, although we had submitted 800 volumes of evidence and analysis about who Leonard is. Then today, the folks who were even involved in his initial conviction and what they had to say about it, and them not even wanting to hear from them. What was also stunning is the amount of the vendetta, and that word has been used a lot, but it is just that, the vendetta that is still held against Leonard by the government. It is as strong as ever, and like I said, it was stunning, though in many ways not surprising, that they are allowed to work in this arbitrary manner about the sentencing of many of these men who are in their late 70s.
Paint a picture of why Leonard is so important to you and really important to the public. Who is this client of yours? Who is this man? Who is this indigenous warrior to you that we should commit ourselves similarly to freedom for Leonard Peltier?
It's often said that Leonard is a warrior, but that is very true, and that's an apt description of him. But to be a warrior, I have learned to be an activist in terms of who Leonard is to be loving. When you ask me who Leonard is, there's a big smile on my face. Because he's so funny. He is one of the funniest people that I have ever met, and it's the way that he really reaches out to people and touches people in many regards. And then of course there is the serious layer of him understanding his principles and standing on them so strong as he did in the parole commission. He knew what they were going to do. And he stood strong. And that's exactly what he has done this entire time, these 5 decades long.
Well, today we bring love and fierceness to the movement to free Leonard Peltier by shining a light in the darkest corners of our democracy when it has failed us. Ours is the ability to hold U.S. agencies accountable for the atrocities they committed against humankind, against Leonard Peltier. We thank for the work she has done and will continue to do to free Leonard Peltier, Jennifer Jones, and we thank you for pursuing equal rights and justice because this is a call to action to free Leonard Peltier. I'm Mimi Rosenberg. And this is Building Bridges, and we've built those bridges to you to build them closer and firmer to our dear sibling, Leonard Peltier. Thanks for listening.